Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the curated online cinema. For your 1 month free trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable. This, of course, is the spin-off of our outrageously popular Film Stage show. During these episodes, rather than reviewing a film in depth, we'll be tackling a broad range of discussion topics related to the whole of film culture. It's going to be fun. Today we have, as always, Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah, Bill Graham.
And we have the newest member of our Movie Talk Armada, and that is Michael Snydell.
Thanks for having me on again, guys.
No problem. You know what's funny? Last episode, I stopped to ask you what you would prefer to be called, Mike, Michael, or just Snydell. And I think throughout the course of that episode, I just cycled through all of those like twice. So I'm still working out what your name will be on this. It's like back when Hannibal was on and I still called Bill Wilk. That's just what happens.
Just go with whatever sounds right.
Whatever feels natural. Whatever feels natural. All right, well, it's time to get into it. So let me remind everyone at home that you can always talk to us on the Twitter. You can give us suggestions for topics. We do pull those. And, of course, if you just want to hear us talk about anything random, shout it out. We may catch up to it. And we're always constantly soliciting your input on our topics. We have another great selection of things today related to a question that we asked on Twitter and Facebook. That's where you can find us. We are at Film Stage Show on Facebook. Just search for The Film Stage Show and you will find us. And of course, if you really want to lay into us, you can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. We also love receiving comments and ratings on iTunes. So do that. Find us, search for us, give us a comment and rating. We may just read it out. In fact, I'm not going to say we may just read it out. We definitely will. Because we love that. I even read a 1-star review that told me to fire everyone I work with. So that was pretty fun for me, but probably not for Amanda and Nick. So that's that. It's always great to talk to you people. Let me remind everyone that you, because you listen to this show, are entitled to a free month of Mubi. What, pray tell, is Mubi? If you've been listening over the last couple weeks, you should know by now. But I will tell you anyway that Mubi is a streaming service for movies where they curate a selection of 30 films for every month. Now, that's not Netflix-style dropping 30 films on you all at once and hoping you binge them in time. No, no. Every day, Mubi selects a new cinematic gem, delivers it straight to your streaming device, and you can even download it, which again puts it one jump ahead of the Netflixes and Hulus of the world. What are they doing now? Well, they still got the Kelly Reichardt retrospective going on. Also, because of the Locarno Film Festival, we have the Direct from Locarno series, so make sure to check that out. And let's see if we can get the applause right this time. There is a special tribute going on to Jacques Rivette. Nope, woo-hoo! Still no love for Jacques. Mubi will be showing Rivette's Dream Cycle, which is 3 rare, never before released in the U.S. films. They kick things off with what is described as the phantasmal noir, which just makes me all kinds of happy, and that is Duel. And then there will be Noro. All right, thank you for saving my ass on that, because that was... I mean, I still said it incorrectly, but at least we were able to correct it pretty quickly. You can get your free month-long trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage. That's mubi.com/filmstage. That's Mubi. I still don't have a tagline. If you got one for me, I would really appreciate it. I'm a clever man, but not clever enough to come up with a tagline. All right, well, that's all the housekeeping taken care of. So let's get into what the people really want. Super excited. We got two great topics today. One of them is a sequel to last week when we talked about the 50 best sci-fi films of the century. As selected by the film stage, we have a new list. That means we have a new topic. This is called I Heartily Disagree With Your Opinion Again, Film Stage. And this time...
Wait, that's the title for that?
Yes. Because, as we said last week, even though we work for the film stage, you know, these things come out and we do not always agree with them. So now, instead of talking about sci-fi films, we are talking about comedy.
Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I stopped opening doors.
And that is old Blue Eyes himself, Frank Sinatra, begging us to send in the clowns. Now, once again, the film stage has published a list of epic proportions, but we are here to improve upon it. This time it's the 50 best comedies of the new century. We're going to give you one film that we think should have been included but was not, and then we're going to get real mean. We're going to heckle the shit out of them. We're going to take one film off that list. We're going to do a clean swap. Not like last time where we hauled that messy, maybe it should be lower, I think this one should be higher. No. This time we're sending one of them off and we're putting one of them on. We're going to start positive. Let's find out what films people think should have been put on the list. Bill Graham, let's start with you. What's a comedy that was not on our list that you feel should have been extended the honor?
This is going to be really fucking easy. Okay. Because I heckled the shit out of Jordan while we were coming up with this list. Y'all probably already know this film because, like I said, I mentioned it a couple of times on our Slack. Hashtag Slack. Woo.
We have to get Slack as a sponsor because I could talk
I didn't want to say that.
Awesome Slack is.
I didn't want to say that. Because we already have a sponsor.
Look, we can have more than one sponsor.
Multiple?
I can talk. I can talk about how awesome Mubi is and then segue into Slack, because guess what? Those are two things that have no crossover.
That's true.
Or you can talk about Mubi on Slack.
Oh, we talk about Mubi on Slack all the time.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, Bill Graham.
Anyways, so this movie is Role Models. I don't know if... Yeah. See? I already have some bands. Yeah. This movie struck me... I didn't catch it in theaters. I only bought the DVD during college. And while I was with some friends, we plopped it in and we were like, hey, it's got Sean William Scott. It's got Paul Rudd. This looks great. Like, let's watch this. And we watched it for like an entire day. We were just like,
over
what
and over
is.
Again?
Yeah. Well, I mean, wow. It was on in the background while we were having a party. And for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, we would just sit down and just watch it. And we'd be like, oh, hey, come here. This is a great part. You know,
that was your version of like a Warhol party.
Yeah, crazy. So this movie just struck a chord with me. It's got LARPing in it. It's all about like kind of man-child kind of growing up and starting to realize like have a place in life and stuff like that. And, you know, particularly considering that we were in college or about to graduate college, that's kind of a it's very pertinent, right? It's very relevant to what we were going through at that time. And I mean, just flat out, the movie is hilarious. It's entirely rewatchable. It's short. It's quick. It's got Kiss songs in it that actually makes you like Kiss songs.
It does. This movie, I will say, is a full-throated defense of Kiss that sort of works.
Yeah.
Guys, I mean, Destroyer is an amazing album.
Welcome to the next part of our podcast where I simply play the entirety of Destroyer.
I don't know. This film is absolutely 100% hilarious all the way through. It doesn't really have a dead moment. Sean William Scott and Paul Rudd are just at the top of their game throughout this film. And it's also got an incredible supporting cast. Everybody in this film is hilarious because they keep running into all these different kids, whether it's Christopher Mintz-Platt's. Let me pull up the IMDb real quick. I mean, let me get y'all's sense while I pull up the IMDb. What did y'all think of that film?
I'm going to let Michael go first because honestly, my throat hurts from how much I had to talk for the intro.
That should be me.
Yeah, Bill, that's probably my favorite David Wayne film, actually. David Wayne might come up again soon. I just think that's definitely one of – you were saying that it's kind of one of the many man-child comedies that we had this decade. And I think along with maybe Neighbors, it's one of the ones that has a real respect – for the growing up period. Like, it's not obviously demonizing Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott's characters, but it can also recognize that, yeah, they should probably, you know, drink less or take their life more seriously. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's just really fucking funny. You were trying to think of the supporting cast. I love Jane Lynch.
Oh, and her constant talk about like inserting penises into different things or trying to get laid.
Just the hot dog and bun.
I was about to say, wait, the hot dog in like the pretzel.
Oh man, there's so many penis jokes in this movie that aren't even like direct one-on-one penis jokes. They're just like they're just subtly hilarious and memorable the entire time. Yeah, and it's also got Ken Jeong, it's got Kim Marino, it's got Joe Lotruglio before he was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Mm-hmm. It's got Elizabeth Banks. Yeah, this just has a great, great cast.
I will say, this movie, I remember seeing the trailers for it and being like, here's another goddamn stupid Judd Apatow-style film. Mm-hmm. I know I want to see this. And then like a friend of mine bought it on DVD and I said, what the hell are you doing? And he said, no, man, I promise this is a great movie. And he made me watch it. He bribed me with a 30 rack of beer. And yeah, we got drunk and watched that movie and it was amazing. And I was honestly surprised at the quality of it. And like the actual jokes going on. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of these movies, I think we've spoken about this on this podcast, I have an issue with the general riffing because it's never as funny. Like, if you and your friends think you're funny, set down like a camera and then just see if your dumb back and forth jokes are actually hilarious in retrospect. But this movie like has honest comedic patter, and it's got a real beating heart, and that's important in a comedy.
You know,
we were talking about with child actors too. The kid is really excellent.
Bobby J. Thompson.
Yes, sorry, I didn't have it up. Bobby J. Thompson. He's really. That's just a really excellent role, especially because it's kind of interesting how it kind of lulls you into thinking, okay, he's just going to make booby jokes the whole time, and as it goes on, it has Brian, as you were saying, a really big heart when it comes to how he begins to idolize Sean William Scott's character. Like, that relationship really feels really substantial by the end.
Yeah, I said the real beating heart thing in a joking way, but I'm serious. Like, there is honest pathos and emotion and empathy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a situation of responsibility that Sean William Scott kind of fails on that really affects Thompson. Thompson's Ronnie in the film, and you know, in a lot of different movies, it wouldn't feel like anything. It would be just another like laugh out loud bit, or it would just be another kind of shrug bit. But in this film, for whatever reason, it really kind of works. I don't know if it's Sean William Scott. I don't know if it's Bobby J. Thompson. I'm not sure who's really selling that. Or if it's just a story overall that this guy is kind of a fuck up and he's finally starting to kind of put it together. And right when he does, he fucks up, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and it's one of those things where he didn't really, it's one of those easy justifications for a lot of people to be like, oh, but he didn't actually like do anything wrong. No, he was given the responsibility of watching over a child.
Yeah, I will say that neglect is doing something wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's kick it to Michael. Michael, what's the movie that you believe should have been on this list?
Well, I'm interested to see how you guys react to this one. But okay. Right. So I was looking at the list, mm-hmm. and first of all, I'm kind of surprised Jackass isn't on it. That might have been our bad. But
did we even mention it? Let me see here.
No, it's not even in the what is that? What is that term? The
also ran yes. the yeah the yes. honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions. Okay. But anyways, I thought about Bernie for a bit, but then what I really picked was Jason Reitman's Young Adult. Mm. And I know Jason Reitman's now kind of in movie jail for Labor Day and Men, Women, and Children.
Wasn't there another one before that also kind of put him in movie jail? I can't remember.
No.
I'll take a look. I think it was Men, Women, and Children and Labor Day.
I loved Up in the Air, so.
Oh, that might have been what I was thinking of. I don't remember. I just know that I haven't really liked a single thing that he's made since Thank You for Smoking.
Which is excellent, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank You for Smoking is the best. And then he just, like, lost that kind of acidic, soul-rending wit and just gave into treacle and nonsense.
Mm.
Anyway, so that lets you know how I feel about your choice.
Yeah, I actually did think about Thank You for Smoking for a bit as well. But I think Young Adult is something that kind of deserves to be talked about for one, that it is a very abrasive version of Diablo Cody. And, you know, Diablo Cody has become kind of, you know, a poster child for quirkiness. And, you know, people point to Jennifer's Body and Juno and Juno as, like, you know, evident of, like, really poor screenwriting. But I think along with Ricky and the Flash, Young Adult is a really interesting kind of experiment in playing with, like, small-town misanthropy. And even by the end, it doesn't really stoop to the treacle that Jason Reitman sometimes gets lost in. It's rewatching some of the scenes, I was kind of surprised how it's not your typical comedy, because, you know, even the ostensible jokes are incredibly mean-spirited. But it still has a voice that feels surprisingly coherent despite, like, the blackness. And it is something more akin to, not quite as dark, but it's more akin to something like Todd Solondz than something that we normally place it into in terms of, you know, the quirky, shit, I'm saying quirky too much, in
so
terms
quirky,
of how we usually... I feel like I'm not even doing... I'm doing a disservice
to
this film.
Well, it's super difficult to talk about comedies.
It is.
Sure.
Except for mine, but like, because I just get to say it's awesome and then drop the mic.
2011 was a good year for a lot of performances, but even now, looking back, I think Charlize Theron is one performance that really got looked over. And, you know, even the supporting cast, when they even have to do small things like be a dopey suburban dad like Patrick Wilson in that movie, or Patton Oswalt, who is this person who was bullied back in his high school days and had a locker next to the character played by Charlize Theron, and you know, even that, even as that edges into, like, very traditional romance, it steps away, it runs away from that just as quickly. So again, it's weird to talk about why this movie succeeds as a comedy when it's far more of a drama.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's nonetheless, you know, worthy of that praise for being kind of an odd duck.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't really like that movie. There's so many parts of it that I do like, but I think in general it didn't make me laugh.
I think dark comedies as a whole are hard to recommend. They're hard to talk about just why they're funny, because dark comedies, I think, more than any other type of comedy, are the ones that really leave a lot of people by the wayside.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's almost like you're speaking another language and still trying to get the point across.
Mm-hmm.
because it's like you're doing something that's inherently comedic, but it involves terrible things and things
sure.
that mm-hmm. ought not to be laughed at. And you're trying to convince someone to laugh at them.
Yeah,
I was about to come up with a really fucked up metaphor, but I decided to just back away from it.
yeah, don't do that.
I will say that my choice for the thing that should have been on here, I guess we have this thing apparently where if something appears on one of our 50 best lists, it should not appear on any of the others, which I think is bananas. because, I mean, we had the 50 best animations, and then it's like, okay, but we can't put any of those on the comedy list, but it doesn't make any sense to me. And the one that I was most annoyed about was a little movie about a sheep named Sean. Because blow for blow, minute for minute, no movie has made me laugh, almost made me cry, and just generally left me feeling like a whole new, brand new human being than Shaun the Sheep.
I thought it was largely okay.
That movie is a comic masterpiece. It is a Keaton-esque romp, and it is just, it's just fucking funny. I to this day can't think about a specific gag from that movie without completely losing my shit. And it's when Sean is in a pound and he looks across the way and there's just this super angry looking dog that's just eyeballing him. And it's just like the stupidest, craziest, most effective thing on earth. And then it gets played back at the end. And I was floored. I loved that movie. And for the amount of times that it made me laugh, I mean, I don't understand why we can't double up a little bit, you know? Because it's not like we're going to have a movie that makes
spread
all
the love
of them. Yeah. Because I was like, Shaun the Sheep. And then Jordan said, no, it's already on animation. And I said, Chicken Run? And he said, maybe we'll just say Aardman Animation. I'm like, why can't we just have them all? why can't Chicken Run be on there? Because Chicken Run is also great. But there's something about the lack of dialogue in Shaun the Sheep and just those character animations that's just beautiful and hilarious.
Well,
and
I think
I loved it.
I think Aardman just really, really nails it. What was it? Pirate's Life or whatever it was.
I think it
that
was
is hilarious.
Pirates.
Yeah, Pirates. With an exclamation point. That film is also hilarious. I think some of the stuff they do is just it's like the Wallace and Gromit series is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen it, Brian, but one of my favorite animated comedies is actually A Town Called Panic.
I have not seen that. No,
You need to seek that out. That I think that ended up on the animation list because
I believe it did.
Yeah, it is absolutely hilarious. It has a lot of the same. Like, it doesn't have any words. They are literally like little action figures. They don't like, this is a very low budget like comedy or animation. And
yeah, no, I've seen the, I mean, it seemed vaguely visually interesting, but I just didn't seek it out.
It's
still on Netflix, Brian.
Shaun the Sheep. I think it's on Hulu.
I don't know.
A Town Called Panic, but I was curious about Shaun the Sheep too.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about A Town Called Panic because it's not on my list. Shaun the Sheep, though. So let's talk about films that should have been kicked off. Michael Snydell, let's start with you. What's a film that was on there that you're like, comedy? Fuck that. Get it out of there.
Well, there were two movies on the list that I wasn't crazy about of the ones I've seen. And interestingly, they're both largely improvisatory. Oh, man, I can't talk.
Improvisational?
Yes, are largely improvisational. And so one was What We Do in the Shadows, but the one I really wanted to talk about is They Came Together, which
I liked both of those movies.
I think They Came Together is like intermittently funny. I was going back to the clips in the last few days because I wanted to see like, okay, why did I rate this so low? I gave it like a 2 stars on Letterboxd or something. And you know, there are intermittently funny parts, and I mean, I pretty much everything with Christopher Maloney is the best, but I just really don't think that film holds together. It's a series of gags that just feel kind of glib and smug to me, and where Wayne's voice like usually appeals to me. I really like Wet Hot American Summer. I like Wanderlust to an extent. I love Role Models. And I'm usually okay with his style, but for some reason it really just kind of came off as really unappealing as a whole film, and They Came Together for me, even though I like individual gags.
Okay. Bill Graham, what do you want to kick off that list? Because it ain't funny worse shit.
I wouldn't put it that way. Yeah, I wouldn't put it that way.
Well, I would, and I'm in charge. So,
yeah. That's all right. So this film is going to be number 8, Observe and Report. It also happens to be extremely high, and
Bill,
I remember watching that.
I wrote the blurb for Observe and Report.
Yeah, I know.
Bill, what are you doing to me?
This will give us good material.
Really awkward right now.
Yeah, you forced my hand, because honestly, like, this list, either I haven't seen some of these films or I just generally do not disagree with them. I largely don't have any issues with the majority of this list. But this one, again, it's another one of those dark comedies that are tough to sell. They're tough to talk about. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what happened with this particular film, but it just never really struck me as all that hilarious or all that funny. I think part of it is just its darkness is almost overshadowing its comedic tone in a way that is really, really difficult to describe without going into detail about some of the plots.
I do agree with that, and that's something that I think people could level against something like Young Adult too. I mean, like we said, dark comedies, man.
Mm. Yeah.
They're a mix. And a lot of that depends on how blackened and dead your soul is, and mine is the most dead of all, so I think I was fine with it.
And yet you want Shaun the Sheep on here. So, you know, it's
I contain multitudes,
things.
Bill.
I know. But this is one of those films that a lot of things were going on with the cast that should have sold me on this film. It's not in particular Seth Rogen. I find him very funny most of the time. I find his laugh infectious.
He does have a stupidly infectious laugh.
Yeah, it just makes you want to join in because it's so childlike. But
do it, Bill.
I can't do that.
Do it.
Anyways, it is a film that not only is it way too high in my opinion, but it's also, if I could swap it out for Role Models, that would be perfect for me. So,
all right. Well, that's your prerogative. I wrote the blurb for Observe and Report, so obviously I don't agree. But I can't defend that movie against people who don't like it. I mean, because if you read my blurb, I talk about the fact that one of my favorite scenes in that movie is when he's talking to a therapist and he is describing a dream that he has.
Mm-hmm.
That if it was in a movie with like a different score and if Michael Fassbender was saying it, you'd be like, ooh, this is going to end poorly for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, no. That's a movie that, like, really trucks in some dark, dark, dark fucking shit. So I get it. I won't argue with you too much.
Isn't that from the Eastbound guy?
Yes.
Jody Hill?
Yep. So mine, and I don't know either of you well enough to know how this is going to land. I can't stand Francis Ha. I hated Francis Ha. I hate, like...
Do you like the Greenberg movies? Do you not
like
Greta Gerwig?
Fine.
Gerwig, yeah.
Gerwig is... Okay, in fact, you know what? I queued this up because I said when I saw Francis Ha in there, I was going to argue about it. But it was low enough, and I was like, you know what, whatever. I lost the Interstellar thing. I guess I should just lay back. But I had reviewed Francis Ha with Jordan and Nick Newman on the 57th episode of the Film Stage show. So I want to play a clip where I explain why, even though I like Greta Gerwig and I don't have a problem with Noah Baumbach, that I couldn't stand this movie. So here we go. I believe that it is. And this is actually a distillation of everything that I haven't liked about Noah Baumbach's earlier work, even though I'm a fan of all of it. It's a distillation of everything that I have to usually either ignore or forgive about Greta Gerwig. And it's like if you like orange juice, but you don't like a lot of pulp, but you can still drink it if there is pulp in it. Like, you can get behind that, you know, you can look beyond that. But then one day someone just gives you a glass full of pulp. It's like, you're missing the point. I usually have to get beyond that to enjoy this, and this is just way too much. So that's what I said. Devotees,
I like that,
of this show will love the fact that even back at episode 57, I found that the best way to get my points across was a
food and
metaphor.
Drink.
Yeah, it's all pulp. It sucks. It's a terrible movie. I hate Francis. I don't like the way that the movie looks at her.
What is the pulp in Francis Ha? I like that metaphor, but I just like, can you give me a little sense of what would orange juice and what would pulp be?
There is no orange juice in Francis Ha. It's all pulp. It's all Greta Gerwig's like, oh, I'm like not your average Hollywood starlet. I can be awkward. I can be, you know, I'm not going to be a stick thin person. Like, she plays a dancer in that film, but she's terrible at it. And it's just like, you know what? Maybe you should actually give us like a thing to root for in your character, aside from the fact that you're just like adorable. And then Baumbach, you know, it's like black and white, and he uses that David Bowie song, and it's just like, oh god damn it, like, don't do this again. Because all the twee nonsense that I usually am like, you know, but yeah, there's a soul around this, and I guess I can get into this, you know, I'll just ignore that other stuff. It wasn't there, and I hated it. And if I had more
strength, you like French New Wave generally?
I do like the French New Wave, and I understand that it's sort of in that style, but I don't think that it has that same soul.
Now, like, I'll agree with that. I think it's reaching for that style, certainly.
Right. It's like the Good German.
It's never quite captioning that.
Like the Good German,
the Soderbergh
one. Yeah, the Soderbergh one was done in the style of those old movies that I love so much, but it didn't have the same soul. It had a much more modern soul. And so, like, people are saying fuck and there's nudity and, like, extreme violence. And it's like, yeah, but you don't, it's not the same thing. Like, you can't shoot it in the same style, but tell the story inherently differently. You know? So that's what I thought. That's that. I'm so glad that I was able to play that clip. And we can all see that ever since I began this, my fallback has been food metaphors. it's all I got going for me.
Way back in 2012. Jesus.
Yep.
Brad, I don't think I've heard any food metaphors yet in the time I've been on, which is sad. I'm still waiting.
I was
waiting
about that the other day. I was like, I don't think I've done a food metaphor yet. But I'm sure I'll get there.
Well, in a way, he just did.
I did. I made up for it now. I think that usually I have to do the food metaphor when I disagree with people. Uh-huh. And the last couple movies have been so universally not great, and then universally great for Pete's Dragon.
Yep.
That I haven't had to like explain things as I would to a child, which sounds pretentious and pandering, and I apologize. Anyway, let's move on. Our second topic today is one that came about during our discussion of Pete's Dragon. The title for this topic is Burn It Down and Try Again.
Nice.
I hurt myself today to see
Johnny Cash doing his far superior cover of the song Hurt, originally by Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor. So why do we choose that? First of all, because Bill had suggested Ring of Fire for a Pete's Dragon song, and I didn't use it. So I thought Johnny Cash. And also I thought, what is a song that perfectly encapsulates what we're talking about here? And this would happen to be it. Burn It Down and Try Again. Remakes tend to get a bad rap, but usually that's because they're going after a film that was successful on its own. Looking at you, Total Recall, I don't want to say Ghostbusters, but I'll say Ghostbusters. RoboCop, what are you doing? What are you guys doing? Don't go after those movies. Those movies are good. Those movies hold up. What you ought to do is do what Pete's Dragon did and go after a movie that was not great, not universally beloved, but had the kernel of an idea that you could tease out into something great. So today, inspired by Pete's Dragon, we're going to look back on some cinematic failures and try to rework them into successful movies. This is the point where our critic shoes come off and our
come on.
As a filmmaker shoes get slipped on. So, who wants to go first? Who thinks they have? Okay, well, yeah, shit, Bill. Why don't you go for it?
I literally just came up with this, by the way. So
okay, I'm excited. Here's what I'm gonna do, Bill. I wanna interview you about this movie. So,
sure.
First of all, Bill Graham,
yes,
famed Hollywood producer. I hear you have a remake in the works.
Yes.
What movie are you remaking?
Well, actually, Brian, it's going to be a sequel. Oh.
Oh.
It's going to be a sequel.
Is it going to be one of those Lego sequels that we've been talking about?
Possibly. I'm going to give these two guys, and I just kind of gave it away a little bit, but I'm going to give these two guys kind of carte blanche to really go after it and really have some fun, because I think –
Bill, you haven't told us what the movie is yet.
Yeah, give me a second. I'm talking like a producer, right? Around the film and then kind of coming to a big drum roll to tell you it's The Hangover 2 by Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Oh my God, are you actually suggesting this?
Yes.
Bill.
Because
you're my hero.
Phil Lord and Christopher Miller are the guys that literally take movies that shouldn't be good and make them brilliant. These are the two guys that you could literally take and say, that is a terrible idea. I really wish they would have done Ghostbusters. I don't know if they could have improved on the execution, but I bet they could. I think they would have had a hilarious time doing that, and I would have really loved to see them embrace like a bunch of women in that role and stuff like that. I think they would have nailed it. But The Hangover 2 literally is a film that remade itself, right? It was set in Asia, and it was like, oh, here's this goofy goofball. He went out and did it again, and this time instead of a baby, they have a monkey, and you're just like, no, guys, you – like I kind of did want – to go through that entire thing again, but once you watch it on the screen, you're like, oh, never mind, I didn't want this. This is why people don't do this, right?
Right.
So yeah, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, if you're not familiar, they did the Lego movie, they did 21 Jump Street, and then 22 Jump Street. These guys have been
That's actually hilarious, because in 22 Jump Street, they make a point of saying, we're just gonna do it again.
Yeah.
Bigger and better, and that's like a firm part of the plot and the metatextual narrative.
It's great. It's great.
Oh man, Bill, this is a good idea.
This is.
Do you have a plot in mind?
Oh man, they.
You don't have to. Don't worry. I'm just curious.
What if? I mean, let's go ahead and say maybe they lost like a prized Lego or something. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe. No, instead of a prize Lego, maybe what's his name? The fat bearded dude. I can't remember
Zach
his name.
Galifianakis.
Yes. What if he wins like a really or what if he just brings along a really expensive Lego that is in a case or that is like strapped to a backboard, right? And he doesn't have like a case on it or anything like that. And so the entire movie, he's trying to keep it safe from all these people that keep bumping into him or that are threatening to get it wet in some different way, or you know, he keeps losing it. Like this would be, I don't know.
Going with the Lord and Miller inversion of expectations, I think that the new Hangover ought to involve the guy who was on the roof in the first Hangover becoming hungover and having to find all of his friends.
Nice.
And like
yes.
The other four guys aren't even in the fucking movie. Just get them out of there.
Yeah.
And he has to like, or they're all lost. They don't know where they are. They're talking to him on the phone. He's still like, I don't know where I am either. And he's having to retrace their steps. And everything happens in flashback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything other than what we did get, which was fucking terrible. I hated the Hangover too. All right.
I skipped that one.
Good plan. Yeah.
I skipped three because two was such a disappointment. So
did that not take place in space? Is that like a thing that's happening, or is that just a joke that's going around?
I don't know.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I thought there was. I don't know if it's real or false now, but there was something going around about how the next Hangover was going to be in space. Hold on, I'm going to Google this.
I'm super upset. You don't have time to Google it because you're next up.
So, all right, guys.
He's going to cut you off.
Here we are, the front stage roundtable interviews. Sitting down with famed Hollywood producer Michael Snydell.
What's my name?
Michael Snydell.
Okay. So,
and
guys,
so I hear you have a great new remake in the mix. What's tell us about that?
Well, yeah, I do have a good remake, and I'm interested in two directors for it, depending on who's
directors.
Interested.
Okay.
But I want to get into a little bit of history first.
Okay.
So the Alien series is one that's fallen from grace a little bit.
Oh yeah.
No, what?
After Alien and Aliens and Alien 3, which has still, you know, attracts some devoted followers. There was a little movie called Alien vs. Predator.
Oh.
And it was given to Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah.
Who,
please tell me you're going to give it to Paul Thomas Anderson.
He squandered the premise just a little bit.
Well,
and you know?
Let's be honest. Like, the Predator films were pretty damn good, too.
The Predator films are pretty damn good, too. Okay. But when you put the, you know, there is a very palatable mood in the Alien films, and there's a very palatable mood in the Predator films. And man, if you put, you know, those two elements together, it seems like it would just be fantastic. Just combining together, you know, the gratuitous action of Predator and, you know, the more suspenseful, you know, like sneaking around aspects of Alien, it seems like they should just go together, you know, like chocolate and peanut butter. But you know, they really didn't have to go very far for a better director of Alien vs. Predator. Did you guys know that Walter Hill had an uncredited rewrite on the first Alien film, and that he was a writer and producer for the sequels?
Really?
Really?
I did not know this.
Yeah, actually, his first rewrite of the first Alien film was thrown away because it was called extremely spare and in the same style as The Driver.
Oh,
okay. So I want to correct history and put Walter Hill in charge of an Alien vs. Predator remake.
He's also a producer on the Alien films.
On all of them, he's been involved.
Wow.
As a producer and writer-ish. So, late his career has been a little bit strange. Although I think Bullet to the Head's pretty great for like a B genre exercise, but I think he could do something really great with Alien vs. Predator. And if he says no, my other go-to is Gareth Evans.
Okay.
Ah. Ooh.
Not Edwards.
No, Evans. the Ray director.
Yes.
Holy shit.
All right, I have a question. Do you have any cast lined up for this? Do you have anyone you'd love to see in an Aliens vs. Predator movie? Or would there even be any human characters?
I do want human characters, but I want human characters who say almost nothing.
So you want the Godzilla.
First person I...
But just directed by the other Gareth.
I mean, yes, but Godzilla sure has a... It has a human storyline. We just don't give a fuck about it.
No, I really hope... This is like whole my fantasy, but I hope that they were like showing us the vestigial human narrative so that in the next film they're like, all right, fuck it, no people.
That'd be great.
And no one will complain.
All right, so as leads, I was thinking Gina Carano.
Yes.
She won't have to.
Yes.
Yes.
I want this
I will
to
never
be
complain about Gina Carano.
As an alien.
Oh my God.
That would be amazing.
You just made my night.
That'd be amazing.
All right. My turn.
So are you going to interview yourself?
I'm going to try to interview myself. I will
this
do voices.
Real to, awkward.
I'm going to do voices to try to put a spin on it. So here at the Film Stage Roundtable interviews, we have... I should tell people listening at home that we did not plan this format.
No.
So I'm about to do all of this off the cuff. So dear God, I'm so sorry. We have famed Hollywood producer Brian Rowan.
Do you want me to do this?
No, I'm going to try it.
Okay.
It's a pleasure to be here, Brian.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for having me on your program. No problem, Brian. And your offensive Irish accent. I hear that you have a remake you're circling. Now, I also hear that your remake will be the remake that sets the bar for movies and their remakes.
Oh.
Why is that? Well... I wanted to approach this movie. We always go after things that are at least 5 years old, but I have a new idea. If a movie comes out and fails, artistically, economically, just generally in the pop culture, we should fucking turn that around and remake it immediately to try to start over again.
Well, all our work is already done for us, so...
Right. You've got the crew, you've got the cast, they're probably going to be able to turn it around. So...
I'm talking about the advertising.
Really cool we got Domhnall Gleeson on this podcast, guys.
I know. So this is crazy Irish, Brian, for some reason. What movie in particular are you circling? Well, first I was going to say In the Heart of the Sea, because that's a shite movie, and it should never be seen by human eyes. And I think that if we gave that movie to Jeremy Saulnier, that would be amazing. Just amazing. He's got a perfect, perfect view of humanity. Great at getting out the real heart and bleedingness of violence.
So
I
it
think
would be
when
called,
cannibalism came in, he would just be awesome at it.
So it would be called The Gray Sky or something like that. The
exactly.
Gray Whale.
Wait, couldn't it be called like Deep Blue Sea?
No, Gray Whale.
There's already
Gray Whale.
Oh.
Gray Whale. Gray Whale.
All
right, well, Brian, so you're not going for In the Heart of the Sea, though. You know, what is the one that you're going for? Well, I put a lot of thought into it, and I know it's very recent. But my God, was Suicide Squad shite. I think we need to immediately turn around, just take a mulligan. You know, if movies are golf swings, Suicide Squad is the one where you accidentally threw your damn driver into the lake. And at that point, you don't wait 20 years to take another swing. You go into the lake, you fish out your driver, and you start over. Well, who on earth would you get to help improve upon Suicide Squad? I'll tell you who. It's a man, he's a writer director, he's bloody brilliant. His name is S. Craig Zoller.
Ah.
Director of Bone Tomahawk. I'm gonna stop with the Irish accent. So S. Craig Zoller, Suicide Squad, would be amazing. Now
we have to make it rated R.
Gotta make it rated R.
Yeah, it's not PG-13.
You gotta make it rated R. Because Bone Tomahawk, and here's the thing though, Bone Tomahawk, for I would gather like 80% of its runtime could have been PG-13
sure.
as long as there was no language.
Sure.
Now, yeah. Granted, the other 20%, I'm surprised that the MPAA even bothered rating this motherfucker. But he is so great with the patter of people who don't get along or have like real visceral differences with each other.
Like, yeah, the back and forth in that film.
Oh my god, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The character building that he does, and the fact that he's able to take a movie that begins with like small town comedy and like a bar called The Learned Goat and like all this kind of crazy stuff, and you've got what's his name?
Give me a name.
I'm trying to think. The older gentleman. He's in The Visitor. I want to say Perkins.
Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins. Yeah. And he's his little doddering guy. And then you've got Matthew friggin' Fox, who just comes out of nowhere to blow you away as a gunslinger. And then you got like poor old Patrick Wilson with his broken leg. And then, of course, you know, it's just amazing. It's an amazing movie. And I think that with a few casting changes, we could make Suicide Squad with S. Craig Zahler. And it would just be amazing. It would be awesome. Rick Flagg, get out Joel Kinnaman, put Matthew Fox in. Goodbye, Joel Kinnaman. I am so sorry. I like you in The Killing. That's hilarious because that's what everyone says to defend why they still cast Joel Kinnaman.
Yep.
Put Matthew Fox in there. Matthew Fox is great in Bone Tomahawk. I'd be fine with him being Zahler's De Niro to Zahler's Scorsese. Amanda Waller, sorry, I think we should get Octavia Spencer in there. Captain Boomerang, make him Guy Pearce.
No, get rid of that character.
No, fuck that character. No. In my version, you're going to want Captain Boomerang.
Ugh.
Enchantress?
Because it's a bone tomahawk?
Yeah. He's going to throw a bone boomerang. No, that's not my initial intent. Now, Enchantress, you're going to want to make her Amber Heard.
Ooh.
Because everything is better with Amber Heard.
Yes.
Killer Croc, you're going to want to put Wendell Pierce's voice in there. Because if you listen to him in Treme, he's got a nice little Creole thing going on. Now, here's the one that's going to blow your goddamn minds, guys.
Okay.
And it's the Joker. No one likes Jared Leto. Get him out. Just throw him out. Who do we get in his place?
I don't know.
The boy wizard himself. Daniel Radcliffe.
Harry Potter?
Harry fucking Potter is the Joker.
From the Nazi, from a Nazi to the Joker?
Yes. I think that Daniel fucking Radcliffe is a fearless young performer who could do something majestic with the Joker.
Hmm.
I think seeing him in Horns, I think, you know, everything that you've seen about him in Imperium, I think he could do it, guys. I think Daniel Radcliffe could do something crazy. Just lock him in a room with some face paint and a pair of scissors and see what happens. Now,
can I give a fan casting that I think actually would work?
Yeah, well, it's not like I don't think these will work, but yes, Bill, please go on.
Can we get Mark Hamill?
As the Joker's voice?
Or no, just as the Joker.
I don't think so.
I think that right now he's gotten in a little bit better shape. He's old enough to be batshit insane. He's obviously got the voice down, would be wicked, really fucking wicked to see come out of his mouth. Right. So far, we've only ever really, unless you've seen like interviews or panels with him where he goes into the voice. But otherwise, we've only seen it actually come out of an animated version of him. I think he's got
his acting, though, in Force Awakens.
I mean, he's got that stare. He's got that 1,000-yard stare. Now, here's the thing.
He's got a lot of stuff going.
I've got some other changes that I'm going to make as this crazy Irish producer I've created who shares my name. You gotta do a couple of things. You gotta make Harley the main character.
Mm-hmm.
You also gotta bump up Captain Flag or Lieutenant Flag or whatever.
So you're sticking with Roby?
Yeah. Roby's in.
Okay.
Will Smith is in.
Yeah, okay.
Jay Hernandez still in.
Cool.
Fine with him. I think they're really the only ones who survived. so you gotta make Harley the main character along with Rick Flag. Now, you gotta say Flag helps to form the team into a unit. You gotta think Kurt Russell and Miracle. Right?
Mm.
You got to have some of that montage going on. Then you have to bring Harley in the first 20 minutes, have her get caught in an early mission, and then have her be assimilated as the wild card. You got to have D-Cliff, Daniel Rad, as the Joker, working to get Harley out. And then you got to have these people be the bad guys. And we know Zahler can do that. Zahler has no problem with morally compromised characters. He will not give a fuck about trying to humanize them with daughters and shit. Now... You got to have Joker be the situation that draws them in, and he's trying to get Harley back. He deactivates the bombs. What does this do? This lets Enchantress escape.
Yeah.
Then she's all like, fuck you guys. You thought Harley was working from the inside to try to take you down. I am. She's going to try to kill everyone. Take out the machine. She's just got powers. They're all trying to fight her. The Joker's like, Harley, let's get the shit out of here. But because she's formed a bond with these people and the Joker left her to die once before, she's all like, no, I'm staying. I have a line for you. She's going to jump down. And this is a perfect trailer line if you can clean it up. And then Deadshot's going to say something like, did you come here to help us save the world? And she's going to be like, fuck saving the world. I'm here to save you guys. Boom. They win. Diablo still dies. And then we see news reports blaming him for everything. And then Will Smith can be like, now we know why they bothered getting us in this. And then Flag goes to prison. June Moon is locked up because despite being Enchantress being gone, they still don't trust June. Maybe you can see a little glimmer in her eye for the sequel. Katana and Slipknot are never in this fucking movie. And then you have Captain Boomerang. Just make him a thief. Make him like a roguish Danny Ocean kind of guy. He's a thief in the movie and he does no thievery. So that's that. That's my idea. You get S. Craig Zoller on this. You give him that outline. You give him a month. He can probably turn it around into something awesome.
Can I get Neil Gaiman to co-write this with him?
Yeah, he can have story credit.
Okay, cool. Love it.
That's all.
Who's going to edit this?
Who's going to edit it? Schoonmaker.
What about the woman?
Thelma.
The woman
you're going to get Thelma on this bitch.
Hold on. What about the woman from Fury Road?
That was going to be my other statement. We got to get her in. We can get her in if the first pass doesn't go well.
Okay.
Whew. And you know who's going to be the cinematographer?
Who?
Emmanuel Lubezki.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus.
Get Chivo on that.
Oof. Oof.
All right. Well, that's my idea. I think it's pretty awesome. And I think it's going to change the way the game is played. Because instead of being saddled with the shit decisions they made and having to drag that into Justice League or whatever, we just put everything on pause. We get S. Craig on that. He zollers it up a bit. Everything is awesome. Tie it back in with Bill's choice of Lord and Miller. Everything is awesome.
Can I give a rundown of a few that I thought of?
The only one I ever thought of other than In the Heart of the Sea and Suicide Squad was Lake Placid. I would really like to see that done well.
It's a good one.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
So real quick, just snap out the titles because we unfortunately got to get going soon.
Yeah. I would want to see The Hulk by Guillermo del Toro.
In it. All right. Printed.
I would want to see The Hobbit, not by Guillermo del Toro, with the script, but give me David Lowery compressing that shit all into one film like it should be.
Greenlit.
Give me Dune, of course, by Joe Dorowski.
Okay.
Greenlit. Give me Golden Compass by the Wachowskis.
I never want those people to work again.
Okay.
I like that one, Bill.
Give me Cowboys versus Aliens by Martin Campbell.
Okay, yeah, getting back with the Craig. Yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. All right. Did you have any other ones, Michael?
Yeah. I'm not sure about who. I guess I'm thinking maybe T. West, but The Runes, which was a horror film that was made from a great book by Scott Smith.
Oh, yeah, The Ruins. I thought you said The Runes at first.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
The Ruins is a great book that was not a great movie.
Oh, and it so is. Yeah. And then I'd really like to see, I'd like to see what Lars von Trier would do with the Final Destination series.
Oh my God.
I think most of those films, as far as like sequels and reboots and kind of going in on itself,
they're pretty good, honestly.
That was a major problem I had in choosing something. Cause I was like, I kept thinking of movies and then being like, but I don't think I'd want to change that. Like, I'd love to do Anaconda. But Anaconda is so stupidly fun that I'm like, yeah, but I feel like I would be like, why bother? It's brilliant. You cannot get John Voight. You can't get a John Voight level. And the
last one I thought of was Devil. I'd really like to see someone do something really
the
cool
elevator movie?
With the premise, of a one environment elevator thriller. That sounds wonderful.
Okay. Would the devil still be involved?
What about David Twohy or the guy that directed Buried? I can't say that. What can I say?
Buried. Yeah.
Buried.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he hasn't been as great now. Actually, maybe the Black Mirror guys. Can they do that? They could do something cool with like Paranoia. I'm talking about the showrunner. What's his name? Charlie
Hunnam. All right. Well, we did solicit engagement from our listeners. They sent us a slew of tweets and a trickle of Facebook posts. So I am now going to run through everything that they said. Let's see. This last time I didn't have any trouble fitting our responses into the runtime of this song. Let's see if I can do it again. So here we go with listener feedback. Okay, Paul Sorrell said Alien vs. Predator, Dune, The Hobbit with Guillermo del Toro, Alexander, and Dinosaur, the Disney film, as a silent film. My wife said, I want a remake of Queen of Earth, directed by Melanie Laurent, written by Polly Stenham. She also said, BVS DOJ by John Hillcoat, rewritten by Neil Gaiman. Dream team would be Anton Yelchin as Luther, but we were robbed of him. And the final one that she said, last one promised, Sucker Punch by George Miller with Amber Heard as Baby Doll and a score by Trent Reznor.
Hell yeah.
We also have Zeke Peter. He said, Big Trouble in Little China, sorry, love it, but that movie is bad. Ooh. I wish everyone was in the movie Russell thought he was in, because that would be great. We also have Rapscallion, which is probably not your real name, but still really cool anyway. He says Star Wars episodes 1-3. Then we have Tyler. I want to see a dark, gritty reboot of Minions. It's the only way I'll watch that shitty movie again. I wish you'd given us a director, Tyler. Then we have Kat, and she said Ender's Game or the Percy Jackson series. Despite being YA novels, they have so three O's much potential. She also said, also Tomorrowland, great concept, great potential, horrible execution. Little Half Blackout says The Purge. Vladimir said, I'd love to see Dune get remade by Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yeah.
Jim Hutchinson said, Matrix Revolutions, made in the spirit of the first two. Comedy film guy said, Maleficent, directed by David Lynch or Jonathan Glazer. DJ Mecca said, The Prophecy, Fantastic Voyage, The Star Chamber, The Juror, I Got a Million, but he only wrote four. Nathan Hill, Cable Guy, directed by David Fincher. Last Action Hero by Ridley Scott. Then we have Kenneth Kraheli. I'm so sorry, Kenneth. I think I said that last week, and you actually said that I got it right, so maybe I did it again. Let's Be Cops by Jean-Luc Godard. From Facebook, we have Angelo Thomas. I'd like to see the remakes of The Wiz and Super Mario Brothers. Again, please, why didn't you give us a director? Friend of mine, Brendan Kennedy, said Dungeons and Dragons, as directed by Guillermo del Toro. My father said Pete's
Warcraft?
Dragon, Kelsey Grammer is the dragon, Ozzy Osbourne is what's-his-name, Brian De Palma, maybe John Ford, I don't know. We didn't fit it all in the song. I'm starting it over again. We have one more, and that is by Dan Gavazdin, friend of the show. He's been on a few times. He says, The Force Awakens, directed by Rian Johnson or Damien Chazelle. I really think the poor world building and storytelling may haunt this series moving forward. No matter the future director slash screenwriter, I know I can come up with a better answer to this, but this is a personal ask. Whew. So that is everything that we got back from you, the fine listeners. Thank you so much. You guys rock. There were some good suggestions out there.
Yeah, your wife killed it.
Definitely. I know she did. That's why I married her. You think those questions weren't on the test?
Ah.
No one else
guys,
gives
I found
their
one
wife
more.
A test before they propose? No? Okay, no. That's fine. What was that, Mike?
I found one more.
Okay.
I forgot to say.
Oh, wait.
Ed TV, directed by Charlie Kaufman.
Okay, damn. Well, that's all for today. That's all for this episode of the Film Stage Roundtable. Let me remind everyone out there again that we are brought to you by Mubi. Mubi, the streaming service where every day you get a new cinematic gem. Independent, foreign, awesome. It sticks around for 30 days. That's how long you have to watch it. Feel free to download it to a device so you can watch on the move. You can get a free 30-day subscription to Mubi by going to MU.com. bi.com/filmstage. And once again, tell us if you sign up and tell us what you watched, and we will talk about it because we love to hear from you people. And I love the song Rockin' Robin, so I have no problem continuously pumping that into your ears. Let us know what you thought of our crazy thoughts and opinions by finding us on iTunes, reaching out on Twitter at Film Stage Show, or Facebook by searching The Film Stage Show. And, of course, by going to thefilmstage.com and commenting on the episode page. If you have any ideas for topics that you want to hear about, tell them to David Lynch, and he will whisper them to us through the ether. Or, of course, you can just use any of the methods that were mentioned previously. Speaking of reaching us, let us tell the fine folks at home where we can be found. Mike, Michael, Snydell, Michael Snydell, where can we find you online?
I'm at on the Twitter at Snydell, and you can read various things from me on The Film Stage and Pace Magazine.
Sweet. Bill Graham, where can we find you and your glorious mustache?
You can find me thinking of other great movie idea remakes on Twitter at CableBFG. And then you can also find me writing about movies on The Film Stage and also FreshFiction.tv.
Awesome. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can find me on Letterboxd at the same. Don't find me on Facebook. You don't want to see me arguing politics with my friends or getting into weird fights with my family over Pokemon. Yes, that is something that actually happened. Whew. What else is there? Always on thefilmstage.com, where we have crazy, crazy lists all the time now. And right here on The Film Stage Show, our next review will be on Kubo and the Two Strings. Look for that. Hey, it just started raining. Perfect time to stop talking to you all so I can go outside and enjoy the thunder and lightning. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great day.